Our development review fees are increasing by an average of about 2.7%, reflecting essentially personal services cost increases, and line and branch charges are increasing by an average of about 3.7%, reflecting project cost increases for sewer connection projects, sewer extension projects. Last page shows where we are with respect to our sanitary SDC relative to some other cities in the West and locally as well. And again, we're pretty much in the middle of the pack. There are some who are much higher, but there are other neighbors who are a fair bit lower. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Anybody signed up?
No one signed up.
Any comments from council?
Thank you, Jim, to you and your team of putting together a really concise report, and your ongoing management of the Bureau is just superb. Thank you.
Thank you. Move to second reading, item 558.
Revised residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges effective July 1, 2007.
Good morning. Susan Anderson, Director of the Office of Sustainable Development. And with me here is Bruce Walker, the Solid Waste Manager, and Jennifer Porter, Solid Waste Analyst. This morning, we're happy to announce that solid waste rates will only go up 1% for the coming year. That's just 25 cents for the average customer with a 32-gallon can. We've found that the residential hauling companies, the private residential hauling companies that are on franchise, with the city continue to be very effective and provide great customer services. We have found that there have been increases in both fuel and labor costs, but that has been offset by very strong recycling markets. So the way we set the rates is we add up all the costs, and then we take all the recycling that happens throughout the city, and we subtract that out in terms of the price that people pay. Residents are still recycling about 60% of total solid waste, and so that really does help impact the rates and lower the amount that they have to pay every month. I also want to mention that within this rate, we continue to provide a discount for mini-can users. So the cost of a 20-gallon mini-can is $2.75 less than the regular 32-gallon can that most people use. So I'd like to encourage you all to think about that if you haven't already switched. So that's it for rates. We will be back in late June or early July with a proposed new plan that will impact both residential and commercial waste collection, waste prevention, and recycling. That's it.
I actually had a question about that. Given that the residential waste program is so effective via the franchise system, why don't we extend that same system to the commercial system?
You will have an opportunity to look at that right now. Currently, we have the draft plan out, and as part of the commercial proposal, there are three options. One is to keep the current competitive system but add on additional regulatory things, saying that they must recycle paper at all businesses, large food generators must compost their food. The other way is we could just set rates but still allow people to choose their haulers. Some jurisdictions throughout Oregon do that, and it's very effective, and or we could go to a franchise. So we're getting comments on all of that through June 15th on the plan. I'll make sure that you get a copy of it again.
I've actually read that.
Okay.
And my question was more to you in terms of asking you for your reaction. Is I'm just asking as a matter of policy, what would be the argument against extending this same kind of program, given the efficiencies and the
right.
The way that it runs, which is excellent? I mean, why would there be an argument against extending that?
I think you would hear, and we have heard, a very strong argument from the business community. Large businesses in the community like to be able to do two things. Ones that have many locations, they like to be able to do one contract for all of those locations instead of having to have different haulers. They can get a much better deal by doing that.
And again, I don't mean to cut you off, but
sure.
I understand that that's theirs. I'm asking you from your perspective.
So from my perspective, my job is to do both, provide great customer service, recycle as much as we can, reduce the waste in the system, and do it at the best cost. And potentially, it could be at a higher cost for some customers. On the flip side of that, though, we have found that for smaller customers, the ones just with a roll cart, sort of like a big residential, they may be paying more right now. So
yeah.
There could be some good reasons to go to a franchise.
Okay, great. Thanks.
That's it. Do you have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody signed up?
We have David White.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Dave White. I am regional representative for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and I'm chair of a group called the Tri-County Council. It is a representative group of solid waste and recycling collectors that work on programs throughout the metro area, and we work directly with the City of Portland on some of your programs. Again this year, Tri-County Council has worked with your city staff and your independent consultant to analyze the cost reports that we present to the city on an annual basis, and your city staff's projected costs in establishing these recommended rates. We do support the rate recommendation that's before you today. One caveat is, as usual, I think on an annual basis, we are a bit concerned about what you just heard about, the projected revenue that's expected from the sale of materials. Every year the city tries to analyze and actually does a very good job of analyzing what is expected from the sale of materials as an offset to our costs. But the markets are volatile, and with what's going on in China with their economic development, it's always an issue. But like I said, the city is generally accurate, and we are optimistic. Looking forward to into the future, we are working with the city on maybe developing new can weight study procedures. This is the annual study that the city does to determine how much garbage is being disposed of in the various levels of service. We want to work to help make that procedure more efficient and cost-effective, make sure that it's accurate, and to help increase the confidence that we have in those results. Actually, in the past, you've done about 10,000 different weights, which is a huge project on an annual basis, and it costs money, and we think maybe we can make that a little more cost-effective and, like I said, increase the accuracy. The majority of our haulers support what you just heard about, which would be the recommendations on the residential side to move to carts for recycling and yard debris, and we continue to look forward to those discussions. And lastly, we're very proud of the fact that we are, by the auditor's survey that's done annually, we are ranked number 2 now in services provided to the citizens of this city, right behind the fire bureau, and we intend to continue to help the city work towards meeting its sustainability goals, reduce emissions, and increase recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
That's all who signed up.
Moves to second reading, item 559. We're about 2 minutes early. But I bet by the time you read it and
read slow.
Get up here.
Yeah, read slow.
Fine.
559, declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct street improvements east of Mallory Avenue in the Northeast Winchell Street Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Adams, did you have anything?
No, I'll let
it. It'd be great if you could come up with something for a minute and 10 seconds.
Well, I can't say enough about Andrew's tie selection today.
It is outstanding.
It is assertive. It is confident. It is colorful.
I'll take a risk with going early, actually.
It puts to shame all of our selections. How's that?
That's excellent.
You should see Sergeant Engen gun.
Yeah.
Don't go. Never tease
stop.
Someone with a gun.
Stop.
Thank you, Commissioner. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. With me is Sergeant Matt Engen from Northeast Precinct. Just wanted to go ahead and walk you through a brief PowerPoint presentation. This particular LID was initiated at the request of Commissioner Adams to deal with some long-standing transportation and neighborhood livability issues that we've had in the area. It has been a very effective partnership between the Portland Office of Transportation, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, specifically liquor licensing and crime prevention, as well as the Portland Police Bureau. There are three diverse businesses that will benefit from this project if it moves forward. The first business and the largest one in terms of assessment is Kraft Foods. Kraft Foods is based in Northfield, Illinois. They were recently diversified from the Altria Group, which is, among other things, was affiliated with R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. They are now a standalone company, and they have just been exceptional to work with. throughout the course of the LID discussions. Kraft Foods is a publicly traded company, so they do have responsibilities to their shareholders, but they have been very good in terms of recognizing the need for this project. And while they haven't made a final decision on this project, they have been very engaged with the city throughout this process. Kraft does provide 350 family wage, living wage Portland jobs, and this project is a key part of the infrastructure both for truck traffic and potentially employee traffic for access to the Kraft facility. One thing you may not know is that food products that are manufactured here at this location are shipped from Portland across America. My understanding from Kraft is two-thirds of the nation is served out of their Portland facility. And they have been exploring the possibility of expanding their bakery operations, and this project will help them help serve them with transportation infrastructure for the future should they decide to expand. One of the concerns that Kraft raised with me a year ago when I first met with them was the condition of Northeast Winchell Street, which you'll see in a minute, as well as the ongoing need for maintenance and a gravel street that is traversed by truck traffic on a daily basis is basically a no-win situation in terms of maintenance. The second of the three businesses is Exotica International Club for Men, based out of Scappoose. They initiated this project, and they have been exceptional to work with throughout the course of these discussions. I've simply never had any hesitation from them whatsoever in terms of doing the right thing for the neighborhood and working with the city to get the street improved. And Sergeant Engen will talk more in a minute about his work with them as well. They are a restaurant, a lounge, and they also provide adult entertainment. And both Exotica, as the lessee of this property, as well as the landlord, have been fully engaged with PDOT and initially brought the problems on the street to my attention a year and a half ago. And then finally, the third business is Meadow Sweet Farms of Kent, Washington, and they ship dairy products up and down the West Coast, with Portland being a central hub in that operation. I just wanted to show you a picture. This is Northeast Winchell Street, east of Mallory Avenue. You can see the trucks lining up there on the street, and you see the potholes on the street. This is a very chaotic right-of-way right now. There's truck traffic on this street. There's no regulation of parking of trucks on the street. There's no regulation of movement of trucks on the street. When I went out and did a site visit, what I found was is that trucks were cutting through the Exotica parking lot and the Meadow Sweet Dairy parking lot to make turn movements onto Mallory Avenue. This is a map of the LID. You can see the Kraft property is by far the largest property in the LID and front the south side of Winchell Street. And you can see on the north side of Winchell Street, you have Meadow Sweet Dairy on the western portion of the block on the north side, and you have the Exotica property also on the north side, but on the eastern part of the block. The half street improvement there at the very eastern end of the street was constructed by Jack in the Box when they built their fast food restaurant there and was built entirely at their expense, and therefore they are not being proposed for assessment as part of this LID. So in terms of neighborhood improvement and community policing opportunities, this project offers transportation and stormwater solutions. Right now, the runoff basically goes wherever it wants to and winds up in the Columbia Slough. We will go ahead and treat that stormwater prior to discharging it into the Columbia Slough. From a traffic point of view, we will improve safety for employees of all the businesses on the street, trucks using the street, and also pedestrians. And we will provide parking enforcement to regulate the use of the right-of-way. Right now, we have a lot of trucks, for example, simply parking in the middle of the street, blocking the street with no ability to really enforce that. We will end the use of private property for turning movements onto Northeast Mallory Avenue. And perhaps most importantly, we will eliminate the continual and ineffective graveling and grading of the street. In terms of Portland Police Bureau calls for service, this area has in the past been a real drain on city resources. Just using the police bureau as an example, they had 56 calls for service from July 7th, 2006 through August 17th, 2006. This project will better facilitate police enforcement. It'll provide a more orderly streetscape environment from the project. I have a couple memoranda, one from the Police Bureau and one from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement that I'll pass out in a moment. Both the Office of Neighborhood Involvement as well as Northeast Precinct are supportive of the LID. So that's the end of my presentation. I thought I would just turn it over to remarks from Sergeant Engen, and then after we take the property owner testimony, I just have a minor housekeeping amendment for you. Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Matt Engen. I'm a sergeant in Northeast Precinct. I'm a night shift supervisor, and I've been the lead point of contact for the Police Bureau at Exotica for the last year and a half. The Police Bureau strongly supports the improvement of Winchell Street through this LID process. Andrew touched on the majority of the issues from a general transportation issue. It's not only just a residential or just a side street. This is a commercial street that takes a lot of truck traffic. So any repairs that are done by the adjoining businesses are quickly undone within days or if not weeks from the heavy truck traffic. There's virtually no safe way to use a bicycle or a motorcycle down the street without taking a risk of life and limb in your own hands due to the severe potholes that come up. So just from a general transportation point of view, we strongly encourage that. From a more police-centric point of view, some of the stats Andrew referenced in that time period, a lot of those were self-initiated calls for service for officers to dispatch that location to try to head off problems. Last summer, for majority of the year, about 8 months, we had substantial crimes of disorder and violence at that location. I've been out there on many shootings, stabbing in which three employees were stabbed, gang activity, drugs, a lot of general disturbances. We're pretty fortunate that, during that time of disorder, no one was killed.
You haven't said exactly where that's tied to. I'm assuming it's at the Exotica.
Yes, sir, it is. No issues from the Police Bureau for, Craft or Meadow Suite. Andrew had a picture of the back lot of Winchell Street and the Exotica's parking lot. To paint a picture, it's there's no delineation from where the broken pothole of the Exotica parking lot and the street and gravel kind of merge together. It's just a sea of open area in the back. So what traditionally will happen is it's a busy night. There's lots of cars back there. It's totally packed. Occasionally, it's so filled with cars and people haphazardly deciding where to park and where to create lanes of travel that any access for emergency vehicles or otherwise is completely blocked from the south side of the location. During that time of disorder, summer of violence, if you will, shootings, stabbing, lots of drugs, gang activity, we met with the club, initially some reluctance, but eventually realized that this could not continue, became very proactive with us, changed their security protocols and their ideas towards safety. Since last August, we haven't had any shootings. People designated as gang people or gang affiliates have rapidly or significantly been reduced. I'm not aware of any more substantial drug activity. They've done all they can from an employee and a personnel perspective to cease the violence at that location, and they've been willing and active partners with us to change the way their business is operated to limit the problems. But now what we're stuck with and what the last step is some crime prevention through environmental design issues at that location. This improvement district would not only make the road safely passable, but also regulate and control and set a tone for the area. Sidewalks, curbing, lighting, and generally for us as an enforcement arm to come out to the back location, the back lot, if they did have a problem, say, you, sir, are on Exotica's property, you need to leave now. They don't want you here. Or conversely, you're on a city right-of-way. I have certain tools in my ordinance book. I can deal with your behavior or your misbehavior at that point. As it stands now, I walk back there and it's just a sea of gravel and potholes. This guy looks felonious. Is he on their property? Is he on the street? Where's my justification? Does the bar want him here? Do they not? It's kind of leaves my hands tied on a dark night. I go out there and there's a lot of bad guys. What can I do and how can I do it? So to a degree, setting the boundaries, establishing sidewalks, the street will enhance our ability to respond to calls for service out there. Will this pavement and concrete eliminate any and all problems for all time at Exotica? Absolutely not. But they have shown good faith for the last 8 months of cleaning up their act, improving the business operation, and doing all they can on a personnel and security angle to stop the problems. I think this is just the final step to solidify that, and they've been willing to work with us, and we've been happy to return the favor to them. Any questions?
I was curious, because until you got to the last part, we talked about where they've been working the club to cooperate with you. Did at any point in there did you use or reference the time, place, and manner ordinance to gain that cooperation?
A little bit through ONI towards the end. The most of our hammer, if you will, was through OLCC, their license, and our chronic nuisance ordinance. We did work and meet with ONI representatives through that time period, and they were also kind of running a dual track with both us and OLCC. There is some pending enforcement action through the state on their liquor license, but as I've told them, and I think it's reasonable, if they continue to maintain good behavior and continue to not allow disorder and violence at their location, I think they have a strong chance of surviving any sanctions from the state.
Thank you for all your work.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. Anybody signed up to testify?
We have two people signed up. Donna Times, I believe it is, and Craig Flintoff.
Good morning. My name is Donna Times, and I'm here as representing the tenants of 240 Northeast Columbia, Exotica International. One of the things I wanted to focus on was what I come into when I open the building in the morning, literally every day at 8 o'clock. We've been tenants there approaching 10 years this September, and last year was a little bit of a nightmare for us, but part of what we had problems with was controlling the street on Northeast Winchell. We had people basically residing there in their campers. We now have a person that's been in their van there for over a month. I talked to an officer last month, and he asked me why we didn't have the vehicle towed, and he wasn't even knowledgeable on the fact that that was not part of our property. Some of these calls that we have that are coming into the area are specifically on Northeast Winchell, and unfortunately, since we are open, these items are being acquainted with us at these later hours. So we are fully in support of the improvement of the street. Hopefully it will reduce the amount of illegal dumping that happens in that area. There's no landscaping provided in that area. There's lots of things that are there that are not within our control, and we just wanted to fully support this improvement.
I appreciate you cooperating with the police and ONI too to address your problems. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Was there a Craig Flintoff? Oh. I'll take it.
Oh, you'll take it?
Okay. There's a few copies for him.
Good morning. I'm Craig Flintoff, one of the owners of Meadow Sweet Farms. We are for the project. I guess what we're not for is just actually how they came up with the assessment on who pays what. We have a very small operation. We have currently 7 employees that are full-time. We run 3 trucks out of our base of operation, and we bought the building about 4 years ago, as is, with the alley pretty much the way it has been. The street. There has been some gravel thrown at it, and it obviously is a very rough part of town as far as the road goes, but. Our contention is the impact that Kraft has on the road with, well, I find out now it's 350. I was told originally 250 employees. The current proposal is based on frontage, which, of course, they still have the highest burden, but I still am not comfortable with how it's based since we don't currently use the road and they use it for staging on a daily basis. Since this LID was proposed, the Club Exotica did place some barriers to prevent traffic from cutting through their parking lot and from cutting through our parking lot. So it does put a clear line on where their parking lot begins and where the public street is. So hopefully that will cut down on some of the parking issues and the riffraff issues. And I guess it is the line. If you're on the other side of the barriers, then, you know, shame on you. And I do think the enforcement of even the van at our last meeting on the 24th of April, we discussed the homeless person living in their vehicle on the street and still there this morning, you know, dumping their trash and living in their vehicle. But, you know, we are for the project, just not at the current rate of assessment for our business. We are, like I say, very small business and not even a profitable business at this point. It's a division of our other company up in Kent. And it's yet to show a profit. So the proposal as it sits now could be the end of Meadow Suite Portland. So anyway, thanks for your time and consideration.
What would be the bill under the currently proposed formula?
I think ours was a little over $500 a month for the next 20 years. I think it was, I don't have it right in front of me. It was $60,000 to $70,000, somewhere in that range. And, you know, if they came under budget, it would be perhaps less. But like I say, when you're not making a profit, $500 a month is a lot of money to go backwards.
How long have you owned the property?
About 4 years, and it was just a business decision based on our customer base being in the Portland and Eugene market. We were taking care of a lot of the chain accounts in the Seattle market, and we were forced to move down here. And, you know, like I say, it's close to profitable, but not yet. And, you know, and this will, you know, be another setback for our business. And I did have some discussions with Kraft about, you know, fixes on the road. And in the past, they, you know, us and Kraft and our other neighbors have never gotten together and perhaps maintained it properly. It was just pretty much a, you know, a dump truck load of gravel, and it would be spread out rapidly. But there's perhaps some other solutions. And another fear of mine is if we improve the road, it's going to be a shortcut around the light at MLK, and currently people don't go that way because it's a little on the rough side. So currently it is a staging area for the truck traffic into the Kraft property.
When we improve a road, there's an automatic and sustained increase in the value of the properties adjacent to the roads we improve, and it ranges, it's variable depending on what was there before and how it looks afterwards and what part of the city it is. Have you looked into the increase in the property value that you might achieve having a proper road about your property?
Yeah, it was discussed with the other owners of the business, and the configuration of our business is it's strictly a cold storage warehouse. It has very little office space. It's, you know, you couldn't convert it into a retail establishment or a nightclub, and it will, you know, before us, it was a meat distribution and packing warehouse, and, you know, we bought it, and we strictly store and distribute dairy products out of it. So, you know, and if we were a retail establishment, you know, the sidewalks and the asphalt would be nice, but at this point, we see no benefit to us. And like I say, you know, it would be nice to have it fixed, but just not based on these percentages, even though we do have the smallest percentage based on the currently proposed frontage. We do have the smallest impact as well. I mean, we have not had the police calls. We have not had, you know, 50 to 75 trucks a day into our facility. We have 3 trucks that actually come in from the Mallory side. Our loading dock is on the Mallory side. So it's little or no benefit to us at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I was curious about the person living on Winchell. Is anything happening from an enforcement point of view to address that?
You want to open that can of worms?
I'm sorry?
You want to open that can of worms?
Well, I'm used to that.
I think it was for about 15 or 20 years, the city ordinance that would allow us to, or basically made it unlawful camping in public places, the city of Portland's camping ordinance also covered people living in their vehicles. Best of my recollection, probably back in the late 90s, a since-retired judge in Multnomah County, quite to the confusion of some of his fellow judges, ruled that statute unconstitutional in his courtroom. Since that time, the city attorney and the DA's office has instructed Portland officers not to enforce that particular provision. So at this time, we can, if we come across somebody, we can ask them to move, we can offer them services, we can enforce any other applicable parking regulation, but there's no crime of living in your vehicle in the city.
But isn't there a separate regulation on the amount of time a vehicle can be parked in one place?
Yes. In theory, you can get enough if it got tags on it, parking tags on it, and then eventually the parking court could issue a tag warrant for it. However, which is oftentimes in these vehicles, it's hard to determine if there's actually someone in there at the time. Towing companies won't take a car if there's someone actually inside of it. And from the police bureau's point of view, we're not going to force an issue to try to evict somebody out of a car just for merely towing it. We've had that issue in the past, and it turns into a standoff.
Is this a vehicle that has expired tags?
I do not know. And part of the issue is we don't enforce parking regulations on unimproved roads that, you know, yeah, it's in the middle of a patch of gravel. Is it probably in the public right away? Probably. But, you know, is that patch of gravel versus that patch of gravel? You know, and that's part of the issues we run into. Without you telling me that's dead smack in the middle of a public right-of-way, I'm not going to feel comfortable writing a tag and putting it on that car, not knowing where the line is and where it's not. So that's some of the issues we run into on, you know, the sea of gravel out there.
But have you made contact with the people inside and said, you know, it'd be great if you moved on?
I haven't specifically, no.
I would suspect if somebody would just do that, they'd probably not like the attention.
It might.
Andrew, doing the LID on a percentage of land square footage, that was an issue that came up, I know, on the 92nd Avenue extension. Is that right? The one that goes through the Port of Portland, 92nd Alderbrook. Did we pursue that?
Yeah, let me clarify. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. The proposed assessment methodology for this LID is on a linear footage basis. So we have a total of 691.28 abutting linear feet, and everything is spread as a proportion of that. It's not based on trip volume per se, as what was proposed for Northeast 92nd Drive, nor for that matter is it based on square footage. And the most logical second alternative would have been to spread the cost based on square footage. That would have put Kraft's obligation somewhere in the vicinity of 95%, and in my professional judgment, that was really a disproportionate skewing of benefit to Kraft. I mean, certainly truck usage is one of the factors, the benefiting factors for Kraft in terms of the LID, but you know, there's other measures of benefit besides trucks going up and down the street. And in my professional judgment, I just felt in the final analysis to put somewhere in the order of 95% of the obligation on Kraft was really a disproportionate burden, especially when they have other frontages and other access besides Northeast Winchell Street.
So the other benefits are the sidewalks, the lights?
The street lighting.
Other benefits that accrue to others than Kraft, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Sidewalks, lights.
One thing I just wanted to mention with respect to Meadow Sweet Farms, I had an on-site meeting with them in March, and I met with Victor, who's also here in the audience with us, and it was pretty clear to me that there was a problem for Meadow Sweet Farms in terms of how the street is now. He took me into his office. He showed me his surveillance camera operation. He had quite a few cameras monitoring the back lot. He didn't show me any surveillance tape, but he told me that he had tapes of police activity on the weekends and all the problems in back of the lot. He talked about people camping out, using drugs on his back loading dock. He talked about people urinating and defecating in the street area. In my mind, those are all things that can more easily be addressed if police officers like Sergeant Engen have the proper tools to enforce code in the public right-of-way. And unfortunately, just grading and graveling the street and trying to enforce that code and on patch of the gravel is going to be somewhat problematic. So, you know, there's a neighborhood livability benefit, which is over and above the movement of truck traffic up and down the street. I guess on a final note, I would just say that I'm very sensitive to Meadow Sweet Farms' cash flow and the price of fuel. But what I would also say is if if Meadowsweet Farms should have to sell their business because it's not profitable. I mean, I can tell you from experience, I have people who are interested in commercial property. First thing they ask me is, when's the street going to be improved? You know, they're looking to acquire commercial property, and if there's no plan to improve the street, it's usually thank you very much, and they move on. So I definitely think that the property, irrespective of what the exact percentage increase in real market value will be, I think clearly that property is going to be much more marketable and much more liquid as an asset if there's a paved street behind it.
But, Andrew, with all due respect, that's not a criterion, and nor should it be. It is what's the fair distribution of the cost. That's,
okay.
I think, our view. And so what you mentioned, the activities behind Meadowsweet, that you think this will help alleviate. I think their point was not in disagreement with you, but those activities are not related to their business, that they're being impacted by other businesses' clientele. And so I guess I'm interested in, currently you have a distribution of 63.8% for Kraft, is that right?
Yes.
14.5 for Meadowsweet and in the club, 21.7. The square footage would change that to not 95, but 93% for Kraft. Crystal would be 4, and Meadowsweet 3. Is there some reason we can't look at both of those various approaches to apportionment and do something in the middle?
That's certainly an option for council, should council want to pursue it. I guess the only other option I'd throw out outside the LID is and I can't speak for Exotica, but I know they had expressed concern about the amount of parking that they have available. I mean, the other option is if Exotica and Meadowsweet want to work out a deal between the two of them where Meadowsweet leases their parking lot to Exotica on the weekend, I have no idea what the value would be of that, you know, doing that. But that's certainly a way to bring some economic value to this, to Meadowsweet, that doesn't involve.
That's separate from this. I mean, that's a different deal. I'm talking more about the apportionment for the actual cost. Why can't we take both of those methodologies and blend them?
Average them, I guess.
That is the frontage and the square footage.
We could certainly do that. I mean, that would obviously be a conversation with Kraft and with the other property owners, but we could certainly do a blended approach where we combine both.
I think I'd be.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Kind of supportive of that kind of an approach.
A simple average of the two.
I guess the only cautionary note that I would throw out here is that, you know, Kraft can remonstrate and defeat the LID if they so choose, and, you know, basically the choice there. I mean, I'm very comfortable with the benefit as it stands now, but it's ultimately, of course, a council decision. So, you know, the only fly in the ointment here is I have to go talk to Kraft and see where they're at on it. I know they're extremely concerned with the cost as they are.
Right. So, Andrew, the process from here would be then that this is the first reading, right?
This is just the resolution that gives me authorization to notify. I think another option might be is to maybe keep it the way it is, and then when I send the notices out a week from today, just advise people that there will be an amendment under consideration that will blend these two. So we don't necessarily formally make an amendment today, but I could notify all the property owners that we'll consider that in 4 weeks, and then we can make a decision then.
I would, and I think Meadowsweet makes a compelling case that the current
I'm sorry, Commissioner, I didn't hear that last point.
I said, I think Meadowsweet makes a compelling case that the current ratio is not fair. And so I'd be interested in supporting something other than the current ratio.
Okay.
I guess the only, this is somewhat unrelated, but related, the issue about increasing cut-through traffic seems to me to be a very real one. I mean, I could see it
speed bumps
being very attractive for people heading eastbound mm-hmm. on Columbia, intending to go southbound on Martin Luther King to cut through there, or probably even worse would be people heading northbound on Martin Luther King wanting to go westbound on Columbia. You know, left turning across traffic at a busy intersection. Are all the property owners aware of this potential and that it's going to happen?
Yeah, we had a property owner meeting on April 26th, which was very well attended. And I might note, you know, including out-of-state property owners, including Meadowsweet Farms, and that was certainly one of the issues that we discussed. I'm not a traffic engineer, but it's my belief that there's going to be problems with cut-through traffic, whether or not the LID moves forward. Having said that, one of the things I was intending to do is to have a meeting with the property owners and bring along a traffic engineer and talk about options, if any, to mitigate that cut-through traffic, but also just importantly to talk about what the best way is if the LID moves forward to regulate the parking on the street in terms of, you know, do you make it for truck traffic, vehicle traffic, during what hours, et cetera. So I think we need, just need to further explore the parking issue and also the cut-through traffic issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. So do you feel clear in our direction to you? Legislative intent here.
Yes, and what I will do is I will have the auditor send out the notices based on the amounts as they stand today, but I will include a notice in there that explains this blending and what the effect would be on the assessment, and then we can go from there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, the one other thing is I do need to ask, we had originally looked to bring this back on June 21st, and there's an amendment before you to move that up one day to June 20th. So if council could take a roll call on that amendment for the upcoming formation hearing prior to taking a vote on the resolution, that would be helpful.
So it would come back to council on June 20th?
Yes.
I'll actually be gone, so I don't know if that changes anything.
But we can amend it to whatever date council wants to do it.
We do it sometime after July 5th?
Or you could cancel your vacation to Italy.
Pardon?
Or we could do it after July 5th.
Let's do it after July 5th. When could we do it after July 5th?
The morning of July 11th, 9:30. Do you need a time certain, Andrew?
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay. It'd be July 11th.
So we'll go ahead and do it at the time certain then?
Great.
Only Commissioner Stan is gone. Just.
Okay. So I guess I need to amend my amendment. Maybe we should just do a verbal amendment.
What's that?
I don't think you're going to get a date over the summer where nobody's gone. But
yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with you guys voting on it without me here.
I'll be here.
Someone needs to make a motion.
So move July 11th.
Second.
It was chaos when I was gone last week.
I was well, no, there wasn't. It was complete order.
No, it was chaos. Call the roll.
Hearing these poor people.
Aye.
No, I'm sorry. Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Do we have any more property owners signed up, Carla?
No, that was the only two signed
so
up.
So I think we just take a roll call on the resolution itself.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Passes. Regular agenda, item 585.
Authorized contract with Peck Smiley Etlin Architects to provide for payment for architectural and engineering services to remodel fire station number one.
Thank you.
We're glad that we're finally ready to remodel fire station one, let me tell you.
I agree.
Only about 5 years later.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Connie Johnson. I'm a project manager with OMF Facilities. This ordinance is to authorize a contract with Peck Smiley Etlin Architects to allow for the remodeling of Fire Station 1 at their current location at 55 Southwest Ash. The city issued an RFP for the seismic upgrade and facility remodel on February 23rd. Five proposals were received on March 16th, and a diverse evaluation committee of seven, including members from the Station Advisory Committee and the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association Visions Committee, selected Peck Smiley Etlin after interviewing three shortlisted firms on April 10th. Their fee of $895,650 is 64% of our original estimate and 9.43% of the $9.5 million construction budget. Their MWESB utilization is 14.2% of the total fee, and we've received their equal benefits compliance declaration. The project schedule is roughly a year for design, production, and bidding, and 13 to 15 months for construction. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
When does the project start?
Well, we're hoping to give the notice to proceed on around July 1st.
Wow.
And what's your M&W participation versus the ESB?
I can tell you that. I probably can't tell you that in terms of percentages because I'm not that quick but the ESB was 12,320, and the M and W, the W was 98,600, and the M was 16,320.
Mm-hmm. So are we intending to meet a LEED standard for this remodel?
We're following the G-rated guide, we're going to do our best with that. We don't have funds specifically for – it's a very tight budget, and we didn't have funds specifically for applying for LEED. But we're all on board with the green facility. It was mentioned in the RFP, and the architect and all the consultants are on board with that.
Okay.
That it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Passes to, I'm sorry?
We have one person signed
up.
Veronica Bernier.
Veronica.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Let me go
double check.
Right, and that's where we're at. That's where we're at.
Good morning, Veronica.
Good morning. Veronica Bernier from Community Health Education, PSU, and
Public Health. Good morning, Commissioner Randy Leonards. Hi, Randy.
How are you doing, Veronica?
I'm doing well. Thank
nice
you.
To have pull up a chair.
I certainly will.
And you
Commissioner
have
Commissioner Salzman and Commissioner Sim. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
I don't notice the mayor here yet, but I guess he'll be on his way. He's probably got more important business out of the
state. He actually has more important business, and he's out of the country.
Out of the country.
Yes, he is.
Okay, good. We can get to work. No, I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
Can we cut that piece?
That was a joke. Okay, good. I just want to underline my support for fire. Your Station 1 is very timely, and it's right where we're shooting for at PSU. We always support fire, come from a fire family. My uncle, Ray Berger, is the former chief of, I think it was arson inspection with the San Francisco Fire Department. So we always are right behind the fire department. Speaking of fires, it's always a good idea, you know, to be real safe. And, you know, I think I support this all the way. I think they're our first line of protection. And oftentimes, fire gets there first. Speaking of fires, we just had a small one at PSU. It was a small to medium-sized campfire on campus. And I just want to underline, just for your information, that in the city and county of Oregon, we do need a campfire permit before we start fires. That's really, really important. So I came here right away, ready quick, and let you know that. And I knew you'd do the right thing. So I just want to say, underline, the support of the firefighters and all the good work they're doing is really great. We support you 2,000%. Thanks a lot.
Thank
it's always
you, Veronica.
Good to see you all.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Anybody else?
That's all who signed up.
All right. That passes to second reading, item 586.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for city property warehouse tenant improvements.
Thank you. Staff then.
Hi, John Acker, facilities manager. This is a contract. This is a construction contract for the renovation or the tenant improvements out at Giles Lake for moving the police property warehouse from its present location. We've sold that property and are now leasing back. Since this was filed, we did get the bids came in, and they're under it's 1.63 is the low bidder. It's a good bid. So that's what we expect to do.
Thank you. Questions?
How much was the old site sold for, do you know?
Net was approximately $2.6 million.
Right.
Much better than the original appraisal. But that's the market.
Yeah. It's always heartening to hear public appraisals like that. Thank you. Anybody that wants to testify?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet.
Okay. Item 587 passes to second reading. Item 588.
That was 586.
Oh, I'm sorry. Item 586 passes second reading. Item 587.
587. Authorize the director of the neighborhood involvement of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to approve and sign grant agreements on behalf of the city for the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, Small Grant Program as established by Resolution Number 36460.
Welcome and good morning.
Good morning, members of council. We're very excited about this period of time and where we find ourselves, and I want to thank...
Can you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Certainly. John Canda, Director of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, and this is Tom Peavy, who is the Policy Manager for the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. My apologies. I want to thank you all for the time you spent with me probably about 9 months ago now. It's gone by pretty quickly, and putting together this Office of Youth Violence Prevention. I tried to incorporate as best I could the advice that you gave me, and I think that as we go through this presentation, you may hear things that sound familiar to you. Of course, we're here today seeking authorization for the Director of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to approve and sign grant agreements on behalf of the city for the Small Grants Program for the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. The City of Portland recognizes the need to address youth violence problems in a way that reflects all members of the community, empowers to solve problems with assistance from the police if needed, and uses comprehensive solutions developed by the stakeholders to address the root causes of issues. On December 6, the council resolved through acceptance of Resolution Number 36460 that the grant funding program recommended within the Mayor's Office of Youth Violence Prevention Implementation Plan Report, the funds of which are to be administered by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and overseen by the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. Through that resolution, the Office of Youth Violence Prevention regarding violence related to youth within Portland neighborhoods was immediately appointed by the mayor to provide grant funding to private nonprofit and youth family community-based service providers whose outreach programs to youth have been reduced or cut, leaving a gap in the continuum of services. Through that resolution, programs funded will include those with a proven history of providing successful services in gang outreach, intervention, mentorship, tutoring, and family support, with the guidance of advisory groups comprised of businesses, neighborhoods, Portland police, other public and nonprofit service agencies. The City of Portland, through the Office of the Mayor Youth Violence Prevention Program, created the Intervention Outreach Services and Summer Activities for Youth in Portland programs to solicit proposals through the competitive grant allocation process. The Intervention Outreach Services and Summer Activities for Youth programs have $400,000 from the city's general fund to allocate to qualifying tax-exempt not-for-profit organization entities interested in providing services to at-risk youth and their families. 10% of the total amount of the $400,000 is to be set aside in administration costs to be paid to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, with the balance of $360,000 to serve as grant funding dollars. The grants program was advised through the advertised through the Bureau of Purchases of the and the mayor's website and promoted through email distribution lists. Project staff organized three pre-submittal workshops, and in these three workshops we had approximately 70 people that represented about 53 entities locally. The Mayor's Office of Youth Violence Prevention, through the guidance of the Bureau of Purchases, created a process to review and rank the grant proposals to make funding recommendations. The process was modeled after the City of Portland Scoring Solicitation Responses Evaluator's Guide, published by the Office of Management and Finance, published in January of 2007. The Intervention Outreach Services and Summer Activities for Youth in Portland grant programs received 26 grant applications by March 16th of 2007, submission deadline time. The list of grantees and allocated funding is attached as Exhibits A, 1, 2, and 3. Six guest reviewers selected the grantees following the review and rank process created and recommended by the Bureau of Purchases. the solicitation evaluation form used by the reviewers for scoring each grant application is attached as Exhibit B. The reviewer scoring for each grant application is attached as Exhibit C. Each grantee in the City of Portland, through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, will sign a grant agreement that specifies the scope and the project to be conducted by the grantee and the schedule of funds to be dispersed. A sample grant is also attached. And I believe you have that suggested resolution language in your packet. I also wanted to point out, commissioners, the organizations that were selected by the grantee committee, some of who are here today, for the summer activities grant, which runs on a period basically now, as soon as this language is adopted by council, through the end of September. Those two organizations are the Latino Network and Oregon Outreach. The intervention outreach services that were funded are Brother and Sisters Keepers, El Programa Hispano, Emmanuel Community Services, and IRCO, Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, and finally the Native American Youth and Family Center, also known as NAYA. And some of those folks, as I mentioned, are in the audience with us today. The next thing you'll see in your packages are a complete listing of all of the firms who applied for the first grant that we'll talk about, which is the Summer Activities Grant. There were 11 firms that applied. You'll notice that as you look at the firms, the Exhibit A2, the top two of those firms were selected, and that amount of money for the total grant for summer activities is $50,000. So the two firms at the top, the Latino Network and Oregon Outreach, will split those dollars evenly. On the next page, we have Exhibit A3, begins the listing of all of the organizations who applied for the intervention outreach services. There were 15 of those organizations who applied on time, and five of those firms were selected, and they are the first five as they're listed. After that, you will see Exhibit B, which is the actual evaluation sheet that the selection committee utilized. Just on the back of that, which is Exhibit C, gives you a listing of the organizations who applied. And on both sides of the page, so that you can reference the numbers, the number of scoring in order for both summer activities grant and the intervention outreach services. After that, which is Exhibit D, you will see a sample contract that has been approved to form by the city attorney. And the last thing you see is the financial impact statement. That will also be utilized in our contracts. If you'll permit me, I'd like to take you very briefly through the timeline. I think you'd be very interested to see how all of this worked out and what we've been doing with our time. And we have these sheets available for you if you'd like to take a look at them as well, if you could pass those out, Tom. As he's coming, I'll just begin. December 6th was the adoption of the small grant fund by the City Council resolution. December 7th, 06 to February 14th, 07, we were in the RFP design and approval stage through the city attorney and the Bureau of Purchases. February 15th, the RFP completion and posting on the City Bureau of Purchases website. Next were the three mandatory submittal meetings for the application process, February 23rd through March 5th, 07. March 16th, the RFP deadline. Next, the RFP evaluator selection information meeting and dissemination of RFPs by review to be reviewed by evaluators, March 19th. Next, the RFP review